When I moved from the Brewster school system and living with my mother to the Chappaqua school system living with my father, it was a reboot in my life. It was a chance to reinvent myself, to go from being a sullen, angry preteen and tween into something else. And happily, what I became was an outgoing, creative, and incredibly happy person. I had made new friends, many of them the kind of oddball intellectual and strange art folks who kind of lurk around a school and do all sorts of fun things. And among that group was a guy named John Rossigno. And John and I got along gangbusters. We had a sense of humor that just kind of blew into all sorts of directions. We loved the idea of taking all the different pieces of school life and flipping them over with puns and in-jokes and inappropriate connections. And somewhere in there, John and I had the great idea to start a humor magazine. This is Jason Scott Talks His Way Out of It, a podcast about technology, history, and keeping myself out of debt. Thanks to Daniel Boyd, William Hearn, Jeff Atwood, and the hundreds of other supporters on Patreon and elsewhere who have been supporting me and helping me stay out of debt. So the magazine was called Esnesnon. It's nonsense backwards. The name Nonsense came from the humor magazine of Hofstra University, which in the late 80s was a pretty amazing piece of work. A friend of mine, Dan Gelman, was attending Hofstra and sent along to me this very, very fun and strange magazine that was being produced by the students. College humor magazines, and I'm going back to the 1980s and before here, they were very interesting entities. They had all of the needs of a newspaper, but their entire point was satire, humor, and making fun of the college lifestyle. One of the oldest is the Harvard Lampoon. It's been around for so long that one of its members, William Randolph Hearst, bought a building for it, and it's been living in that building ever since. Colleges everywhere have created these little humor magazines that create something maybe quarterly or once or twice a year, and it's something that allows a certain level of writing that you just can't get into the regular newspaper. School newspapers and magazines, both on the college and the high school level, well, they're training grounds for people to become journalists and writers. They are relatively serious. They don't want to say strange things in them. If you're lucky, there's a humor column, maybe an op-ed that lets people go into something very strange about the lunchroom or about some sports event. But generally, it's about serious tone all the way down. Humor magazines let you go in a completely other direction. They let you parody. They let you make satire and jokes about things that are going on. Horace Greeley High School, where I was going in Chappaqua, had a nice foundation for all sorts of publications. They had six. There were two student newspapers. There were two art magazines. There was a conservative newsletter that was published. In fact, the way I found out about the conservative newsletter was that the newspaper had made a parody of it and included it in their April Fool's issue. And in my junior year of high school, inspired both by the previous humor columnist at the newspaper and by these college humor newspapers I was seeing, I applied for and I became the humor columnist of the Horace Greeley High School Tribune. My writing style at the time was heavily influenced by Dave Barry and Lewis Grizzard and a few other well-known writers who had books out there that were based off of their newspaper columns. I loved non sequiturs. I loved putting up situations and knocking them down. I really liked pointing out where things were weird or coming up with these odd situations that had tinges of violence, strangeness, slapstick. It was weird enough that after the first couple columns, I remember being called into the guidance counselor's office just to check on me. Was I okay? Was everything going well? Because there seemed to be such rage and weirdness in the humor that it was just a good idea just to see if I was okay. Well, I was more than okay. A lot of that humor, when I look back now, a quarter century later, I had really been unhappy at previous schools, and here it was all flowering and coming out, and the fact that the possibilities had gone from a tiny sliver of a door to a vast horizon, well, I was bursting out in every direction, whether it was in my writing or art or people or movies. I mean, I just became interested in the world. All the humor columns are up on textfiles.com, by the way. They're really strange to read through, and I think I even put some context in them to help people understand. They include the stuff that got edited out. You know, I'd often write these massive columns, and then they would cut them for length or for subject matter. Turned out you couldn't use real people's names in your jokes. You couldn't make direct reference to murder, no matter how hilarious you thought it was in your junior school brain. So I wouldn't want someone to happen on there and figure out that every word was printed. It wasn't. But I was, for 2 years, the most prolific writer of that school newspaper. I don't know what effect it had on people. I don't know if people read it. I don't actually get much feedback except for from my friends over whether or not they thought the jokes were funny. But it was there, and I was a voice that rose up in the newspapers as being this non sequitur weirdo. But not content to be just the humor columnist, I wanted a full humor house organ that would come out at the high school. And my friend John was totally on board for this. John was a delightful and really freaky smorgasbord of all sorts of things. He was incredibly smart. He was a musician. He was a Boy Scout. But he was also this frizzy-haired stoner who kind of got into all sorts of bands and just smoking up and occasionally doing acid and going to concerts. Kind of a little bit of everything. A Renaissance man who got into everything and made everything better by being a part of it. His Boy Scout experiences made him able to work with groups and understand group dynamics, but his stoner side made him really open to strange ideas and doing unusual things and experimentation with art and music. And so I latched on to him like nobody's business. There was somebody there who had not just recently discovered a horizon, but had always been in one. John's father was a teacher in the school system, and as a result, because of the rules of the school districts, he could have his children there. But they lived in Connecticut, so John would actually have to get up way early every morning and ride with his father for about 30 miles from Connecticut to New York to attend school. So when I would ride wearily into school, John had been up for hours before me. And after I was safely home, it was going to be hours before John could make his way back to Connecticut. I don't know if that gave him more time to be introspective, to think about things, or merely made him antsy when he wasn't in the car. But it meant that when you did interact with him, it was like grabbing hold of a tornado. And what this meant was, if I had a project idea, John was down for it. Give you a quick example. Photomat booths, something that's completely gone now, were these little tiny booths that were located often in supermarket or shopping center parking lots where you could drive up, drop off your film canisters, and they would be developed, and then anywhere between a week or 2 weeks later, you could go pick them up. Obviously, drugstores took this away with the one-hour development, and ultimately digital took it away completely, but it did mean that there were these little tiny huts in various locations, and near our school, there was one of these little huts. It was long abandoned, and John and I had this idea of setting up an art project. What we would do, and we talked about this extensively, is we would set up a little booth that was called Rip Off Photo. You would go there and there would be a logo and it would be a little dollar bill with wings and it was called Rip Off Photo. And for 5 or 10 times the amount of money it costs to develop photos, you could drop off your film canisters. And if anybody was stupid enough to do it, we would, of course, close up the little business, go to a real developing place, develop it, and bring it back. But the idea of setting up this project and then engaging with people who drove up and discovered that we were charging way too much money for a service that nobody needed, both John and I thought this was hilarious. The only thing that stopped us was when we contacted the actual company and asked them how much it cost to rent this little booth. the price they quoted was ridiculous. It was something like $400 or $500 a month, plus having to do first and last month, plus some sort of other fee and so on. And we just said, okay, that's too much. So we were always cooking up these little schemes. So when the two of us, who both loved college humor magazines, decided we wanted to do some sort of high school humor magazine, well, we were both fully in on this too. We ended up producing three issues of Esnesnan magazine. Two of them came out during the school year, and one came out a few days after the end of school year. We applied for a budget from the school. We got one, a few hundred dollars. We went around trying to get people to write for us. We got them. To be an organization, you have to have an advisor, some sort of teacher. We got our first advisor, and I won't embarrass him with his name, but he was totally with us except for when he started seeing the material that was happening, and then he started to question whether or not the humor was appropriate. And we turned to each other and said, okay, he is fired. And we went around and we looked at other possible people. And it was interesting looking back because here we were about 17 years old walking around to different teachers. And these teachers, most of them are in their mid-30s, and we're talking to them and we're trying to hire them. We're interviewing them for a job. Do you want to be our advisor? We actually went to the lead janitor because he was technically faculty. He actually really appreciated that we came to him, but he said, I've had to deal with this school system for way too long. I don't need another front to fight them on. Ultimately, we ended up getting an advisor named Ed Barlow. This man was a legend within the school. He had been there since the school was built in the 50s. He was this old, imposing fellow with a stare that could melt steel. And he took the position with very few limitations other than to say that his word was law and that we were to make things good, high quality. Those were his main stipulations. We accepted, and for the three issues we did, he was fantastic. We'd bring him stories. He would just pass them along. The amount of changes he made were so minor and so strange that I still remember them. The one that really struck me was that we had listed him as an advisor, and he wanted to be known as an advisor. He said, the way you phrased it, it makes it sound like I just give you advice. But I'm not giving you advice. I'm telling you what to do. So the role of a humor magazine in a school is always a very strange one. Obviously, schools are meant to be places of learning, not necessarily of satire. They're certainly ripe targets for satire, but are you going to have the school fund people making fun of the other parts of the school? Everything can go wrong really quickly. I mean, it's a tightrope walking act that anybody who gets involved in can probably find themselves in an office arguing with somebody over whether or not something was the right choice. I really liked those issues. John and I were a team, a true comedy writing team. There was something about collaborating that made us each bring the best out in each other. I could sit here now and try to piece apart where things were working or who was making what happen. But what really happened was that conversations between us produced good things. One of us would throw a paragraph of text at the other and they'd modify it, or we'd come up with some sort of drawing idea and we'd both agree on what kind of artist we wanted. We'd love to talk about layout or how to phrase things, and we would just laugh so much when we were working together. I mean, it was a true partnership. We just gelled. Esnesnan, and nobody could pronounce Esnesnan, was a product of love and friendship. And our three issues pulled from all sorts of sources in the school. I mean, one day we found all of these discarded photos in the trash in the photo lab. We used pieces of them. And we got our friend Alex Weissman to use his incredible art skills to draw the stories of the attendance Gestapo who would break down doors if kids were faking their staying home and being sick. We had fake crosswords and essays. And while the issues didn't have themes, they still had a real sense of fun about them. The very first issue, the premiere issue, was called the 10th anniversary issue. And it's interesting to note the difference between the different issues. The first issue was done by printing out of an image writer on an Apple Macintosh and then cutting and pasting the actual paper onto little pieces of cardboard and then photocopying that cardboard. Later issues were done using desktop publishing. They had installed Aldus PageMaker on the school lab, and we were laying them out. Weirdly enough, we were the first publication at this school to do desktop publishing, to print everything out. They were actually still using typesetting services in all of the newspapers in the school. It was weird, too, because there was no printer, no laser printer in the high school. What we had to do was send the disk off to the central office. They would print it, and then through interoffice mail, they would send us the printed pages. Imagine a 2 to 3 day turnaround on your print job. Looking back, the fact that we were able to do 3 full issues of this humor magazine and have me writing a humor column and being seniors in a high school and apply for college and get into college, I mean, I don't know how we did it, where that energy came from, but we did it. I got accepted conditionally to Emerson College. John got accepted unconditionally to Clarkson University, and we each went our separate ways. 2 years after all of this, we both were marveling at the internet and about these things called MUDs, and we would talk through email about how amazing MUDs were. And we thought, you know what would be fun? We should make a parody of a MUD. We should take what the tropes are in MUDs and make one that's weird. And we got some time on a guest account on the Free Software Foundation server, and we put up a parody MUD, which we called Tiny Tim. I took on the handle of Sketch the Cow. John took on the handle of Trout Complex, and we co-founded with the same level of weirdness, humor, and collaboration that had worked for us in high school, one of the longest-running online communities on the internet. I think that there's something special about having friends who you do creative things with. It's not important to turn everything you do into a project or a completed thing. I mean, just having an evening or a weekend working online or off on something together and bringing your different perspectives together and pushing each other into directions you never thought of. There's something just so enriching and meaningful in doing that. It's something that I try to do now when I'm talking with other folks who do archiving or who do writing and just giving feedback or suggesting things. I always try to make myself available because I know from my Esnesnon days how important it is to realize that life is not a singular experience. It's a shared team effort, and what comes out of it could be not just enriching, but hilarious. This is Jason Scott Talks His Way Out of It. Thanks to James Bakoyanu, Mark Pilgrim, Adam Green, and the hundreds of other supporters on Patreon and elsewhere who have been supporting me and helping me stay out of debt. So John and I actually fell out of each other's favor in our 20s. We just went in different directions. He went into medical school. I went into video games. We didn't gel in the same way after we became full adults. And that just sort of happens, I think. I think people grow in different directions, and you can decide that the time that you did have together was meaningful, or you can decide that the current way you are is some sort of referendum on what you were before. I respect and love John. He is such a brilliant man, and he's a neurobiologist in New Hampshire, and I have seen pictures of him with patients where the patients say, "Here's the man who saved my life." That is spectacular. When our 10th high school reunion was being planned, John and I talked, and we thought that it would be really funny, since our premiere issue was the 10th anniversary issue, to maybe put together another issue of Esnesnon for the reunion and call it the premiere issue. We did that. It was about 2 weeks worth of work, and the time since we had been working in high school, it was so much easier to collaborate online and do typesetting and do printouts, and so we printed a few hundred issues of this very strange premiere issue, and it was parody and jesting about reunions and growing up and what it meant to be out of high school and how much high school came with you. It was delightful. John and I, together, have it. We have something special there. But I'm also reminded of a statement from Roger Waters from when they had the Pink Floyd reunion for Live 8, where all 4 original members performed for what would be the last time. People asked, well, does this mean that we're going to get a full Pink Floyd tour? And Roger Waters said, I can handle the way things are for about a week, but I'm not going to be able to handle it for a year. I thought at the time that was ridiculous, considering how magical the resulting product was. But I've come to understand what exactly he was saying. Collaboration is not everything. Some of it is how the two of you, or the three of you, or the five of you interact day after day after day. Little bits of desynchronization of different opinions, over time they just get worse and worse, and suddenly you're in a really bad place every day, and the resulting product suffers. Sometimes it's best just to understand that in a limited fashion you can work with some people, but that doesn't assume that you need to be in everybody's life forever, acting like nothing is wrong, because it will be reflected in the final work. It's not a positive lesson, but I think it's an important one.